It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we are.
Here we are, another great Saturday.
Yeah, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. And it's October here. It's like there's certain times of year we say everything's going on. And, living where we live, it is always something going on. But this next 2 months here.
Oh, it's epic.
You know, because we've talked a lot about getting in the woods and, at bow season open up mid-month and all that happening, planting, all that work being done, people's dove hunts and all those things. At the same time, the fishing gets so dang good that it makes it hard to get some of the stuff on the land done.
Yeah, the problem is launching your boat these days.
Yeah, that's true as well. We'll throw him into the mix of all of this. It's our buddy Captain Bobby Abrascato from A-Team Fishing Adventures to talk some fall fishing with us. Hey, Bobby.
Man, I'll tell you what, it's starting to get in that fall mode right now, man, that fall mood. Get up in the morning and ain't got to wear a beanie and gloves. Well, I might be pushing that just a little bit. It's heading that way.
Yeah, it is. It's getting a little bit better and getting better, and it's all, sunshine in front of us for right now on fishing. And I do want to talk about it, but Mike mentioned it. It's during the news break before we came on. We were talking about this. As people get ready to think about these places, we'll talk about fall fishing with you. Boat ramps are at a premium. They've always been at a premium, but they're at a real premium now. Talk us through kind of what's not open right now.
Well, the big one, at least in South Mobile County, that's not open right now is Bila Battery. And I've heard Mikey told me off the air that it's going to be over 2 years. I've heard that number somewhere in there. So basically, we're going to be without the biggest, by far biggest ramp in the south part of the county for a while. So that doesn't leave much because, like you just said, there's the ramp space was at a premium already in all of Mobile County. Our public ramp facilities in Mobile County are pitiful.
Very pitiful, Bobby.
Very pitiful. It's pitiful for the size fishery we have and the number of people we use. It's just terrible, the access we have to water. Anyway, don't let me go off on that tangent because I really get wound up. But anyway, so we're really minus some now. And what that boils down to is you got the state ramp at West Fowl River is really the only public ramp open except for the ones on Dolphin Island that give you access to the rivers down there and to the sound. And with that, anybody that's run, out of there to get out into the sound or even in that river knows how narrow those waterways are. And it's not just there, but you take rivers like Fowl River and certainly the two tidal rivers over on the Baldwin County side, Magnolia and Fish, you're talking about some pretty narrow waterways, and you got a lot of boat traffic, a lot of people wanting to fish, and we all want to get out to where we're going to fish, but you're going to have to keep in mind that there's going to be like excessive boat traffic on these rivers, and what that means from a safety standpoint, especially running out in the dark, which a lot of times we all do that, or in the fog, which happens quite a bit during the fall and the winter. We just need to be careful. And then secondly, at the ramp too, I watched it last Saturday. It was just terrible. Two guys got into the old crap we've seen at these boat ramps, whether pulling out or putting in, where they're getting the shout match and there's kids involved. But, if you can just get out there, I mean, it just made me sick because there were some kids involved and there's some shout matches going on, and I guess there's something else going around right now where some people got buzzed. That happens every day. Just this poor guy got videotaped.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. It's like I was looking at it, and I kept going, are we going to find out a piece of this story? And then he did this, and we didn't find that. And I was like, yeah, this does happen. I mean, this is not a one-off.
This is not a one-off. It's every day, multiple times a day. You wear out the phone on your battery on your phone filming all the. But and I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I can stand there all day with my phone and film that going on. But the people that are listening that care are going to slow down and be careful. It's the ones that either don't know or don't care that give the problem. But maybe we can cut down on the number of people doing it, and then you start seeing the right, example being set. Maybe some people will learn from it. So I worry mostly about safety, though, especially if there's young people or small boats on the water and you got big boats like ours going down that river, get these narrow rivers, you can really put somebody into a lot of trouble, and the water's cool and getting colder. People don't need to be in the water. It's just, you know, a lot of kinds of bad things can happen. You know, the shouting matches and the cussing and the throwing stuff, that's one thing. But, you know, it's when somebody's going to get hurt, and that's what worries me more than anything, and that's why I'm up here on my soapbox talking about it. I've lived with it forever. I don't really get into the whole thing with it, and I do the best I can do to be courteous on the water. But, you know, we're all going to really have to step back a little bit, both at the boat ramps and on these narrow waters while we deal with this situation. So, anyway, let me jump back down off my soapbox and we'll talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, and I do want to keep, well, not even on the soapbox, but maybe the instructional here, because we have different places. What you said applies to ramps all over. But for people coming out of West Fowl, okay, let's talk about what they should do. Somebody who hadn't done, but they're like, okay, I'm going to do some fishing out there. When they come out of the marina, when do they get up on a plane? How long do you wait to, you know, what should they do?
Well, when you pull out of there, there's a little slip or a little, you know, ditch or whatever that you pull out to. You're in the river. Obviously, that's idle speed. There's mm-hmm. just no space in there. But once you hit the river, it's actually, it's not idle speed. You can run, but that's where the courtesy part and the safety part comes in. You have to make sure that, you know, you're in the clear running down there. And so, you know, that's the first thing to do is just look for, if it's dark, hopefully lights. Mm-hmm. If you see some lights, not to go running past anybody like that. But once you hit that river, as far as, you know, when you're out in the river, it's not idle speed. And there's no idle speed all the way out to Portersville Bay, which is where it opens up into the Sound.
But there's bends. I mean, there's bends in that river with trees on those bends that you know, just because you don't see anybody, you come around the corner, and it might be a good place to be fishing. Somebody's on a point.
That's exactly, and that's a great point, no pun intended, but that's a great point you bring up there, too, because, you know, you're running down there, and a lot of times, especially if you're in a sit-down boat, like a tiller handle boat, mm-hmm. or even a bass boat or a small John boat, and you're sitting down, you're below the level of that grass, that marsh grass of the trees, so you don't know what's coming around, what's around that corner, or what might be coming the other way. So, you know, that's another reason, especially, you know, we talk about this, it needs to be done all the time, but because I think that the boat traffic is going to be excessive in some of these areas now with the situation we got, I think it's really, really important that we address this, you know, and hopefully keep somebody from getting hurt.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen this stuff before, all of us running boats, that you go, okay, well, even if you come around that corner and the boat's coming the other way, everybody knows how to give way and give, you know, go right and give right away. But that's what Mom used to say about assuming things, it makes it pass out of you and me. Yeah. I mean, just because you come around to know that that boat's going to break one way and you're going to break the opposite way doesn't always happen that way.
That's right. You start doing that stupid thing you do in those grocery store aisles, you know, you know, and you're coming towards each other you're coming towards each other at 25, 30 knots, which is a net 50 or 60 knots at each other. You don't have a lot of time to make that decision. You know, the rules of the road, you go port side too, just like you do in a car in the U.S. In other words, you pass on with the other vessel on your left is what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, everybody's supposed to break right in that situation. But what if the other guy doesn't?
Doesn't, exactly. Or accidentally doesn't know, or does it, first reaction is to go. So the whole point is that it's a lot easier to do when you're running at idle speed rather than running wide open, you know, or even at half speed on a plane because it happens so fast. So, you know, the key is if you don't have the visibility, I think that just generally is just slow down. You know, you got to slow down if you can't see what's around the corner. If you can't see far enough ahead of you, you just got to slow down, you know. And even if you can see them, you got a guy fishing or some guys fishing, you know, that waterway is just too narrow to be running past people fishing. You've got to slow down to a no wake, just out of courtesy, but certainly from a safety standpoint. It's easy for one of them, a big boat like mine, to capsize a small John boat.
Yeah, I'm sitting there in my 13 LaSarge, you know, fishing, and you come by, you know, at full kitty. And that's another thing, too. Y'all either, I mean, because people say, well, it's better to keep it up on a full plane. They're going to throw less wake than not. But go ahead and really idle, because I'll see some people half courtesy, back it off, and I call that Hawaii 5-0 mode, where it throws the biggest wake possible. Yeah. So, I mean, go ahead and slow down. Let the engine, let the boat come off plane, sit flat, and then idle past them. And maybe ask them, hey, y'all catch anything, or whatever, just for a second before you, and then get on past them, and then power back up.
Exactly. Yep. That's, and I've heard that about going ahead and going, you know, basically what they're talking about there is, like you just said, going wide open, you're still putting out a pretty good wake, but that half speed thing is the worst you can do. So you're, you know, that I don't ever do that. Well, I'm going to go buy them wide open because I know I'm not going to throw out a wake.
Right.
He's still going to throw out a wake, you know, so.
So just go ahead and back down to true idle, right?
Yep, true idle.
I slowed down some. Heck, that's worse.
Worse, exactly. You know, and if you're that big of a hurry, too, you're going to have, that's another thing, too, is just factor in another 10 minutes or 5 minutes to get down the river. That's all it takes.
Yep.
And you can get out in the open water and get going and get fishing. We're all in a hurry to get fishing. Everybody wants to do that. And on that subject, backing up to the ramp a little bit, too, is, you know, take a second when you're launching at the ramp, realizing now that the parking spaces are in premium. So take a second to go, like, you know, am I meeting a buddy of mine and I'm in a single car? You know, it's a lot easier to park a single truck or a single car than it is a truck with a trailer.
Oh, yeah, do not park in the trailer spots, please.
Don't tie up the trailer spots. I mean, they're really at a premium, and there's a lots of ways to park a single vehicle that you can't do with a trailer on your vehicle, you know. So kind of take that. I saw a guy doing that the other day, and I'm not the guy that's going to go walk up and say something to him, and I was fine. I had gotten parked already, but I felt like saying, man, you realize you're going to get a nasty note on your truck, you know?
Yeah. You know what? And we come back for the break, too. We'll get into fishing, but we'll also talk about some of this etiquette. You know, we just talked about ramp etiquette and then running out etiquette. But this time of year, transitioning into bird schools and all that, there's etiquette that goes with that as well, Bobby. So when we come back, we can pick that up as well as we continue our conversation with Captain Bobby Abruscato. Fall fishing, our subject this morning on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our friend Captain Bobby Abruscato from 18 Fishing Adventures, our guest, talking fall fishing. If y'all ever want to go back and looking through the podcast archives for this show, you can do that through FMTalk1065.com. Just click podcast tab or app or anywhere you get the podcast. You can search Bobby's name, Bobby Abruscato, and then spring, winter, fall, summer, and four times a year, we have him on more, but four times a year, he gives us a little tutorial on that time of year and fishing.
Yep.
So it's a good thing. Bobby, and before we get in, then we'll get into fishing tactics. But I mentioned we come back and say, okay, so that's some etiquette things that are very important, and there's extra stress on that because of limited spots at launches. But this comes up, it's been coming up my whole life. This time of year, it's bird school season going forward. It's not everybody spread out. Bird school pops up. Everybody wants to go. We all want to go catch those fish, right? I mean, that's normal. Everybody has a desire. Gosh, there's fish right there. They're eating the rod tips off. I want to get in on it. But not only can you tick somebody else off, you can screw up your own fishing trip when you do that.
Absolutely, yeah. So the key in what you're getting at there is, you know, how to approach that, both to catch the fish and to keep the fish biting. And just the big thing is just look at which way the wind's blowing or which way your boat's going to go with the current, whether it be the wind or the current, and take your time to go around where the birds are. If you're on the down current side of them or the downwind side of them, take your time to go around them so you can set up and come in from the upwind side. And if everybody will do that, you can have six boats or eight boats fishing the same bird school if everybody does that. And the other thing that does is not that's just from a courtesy standpoint, because if you run through them, even on your trolling motor, if you come through them on your trolling motor, they're going to go back down, quit feeding, and go somewhere else. There's too many shrimp around for them to just sit there on that one group of shrimp. So you're going to shut it down. So if you'll come in from the upwind or upcurrent side, quietly drifting or even on your trolling motor drifting, you're making a lot longer casts. So you're going to get to the fish before you're going to get your baits into the fish before your boat gets into them. So that's the key to the whole thing. And it just takes 1 second to go, okay, the wind's blowing out of the north and I'm on the south side. And if school looks like it's about 100 yards wide. So if I run 150 yards around them, they're not, you got plenty of time. They're going to keep feeding until somebody screws it up. So, you know, just take an extra 2 or 3 minutes to go around them and get set up. And you know, again, here's the big operative word, and drift into them while you're casting. Sometimes it requires being maybe two casts up before you actually get into the fish. But if you can be patient enough to do that, it is you're going to be well rewarded, because the fish will keep biting. I don't have to tell you guys, y'all have been on enough of those things. When you get in one right, and I don't care if there are people fishing, you get in it right, and like you just said, the action is just absolutely insane. And it turns a decent fishing trip into a mega fishing trip real fast if it's done correctly.
Yes, it is. Okay, so, and we'll get to the kind of the bird schools, but walk us through here. Here we are, and early October. Now, every year's not the same. I hate to even talk about salinity levels, but it's been a pretty good situation, as dry as it's been. What are we doing now in early October? And then let's walk through, like, where are you finding fish now for the next week or so? You talked about the sound. Are you still down the south end? Are you starting to move north?
I am. I'm still down on the south end. My trips in the last few weeks have still been down on the south end. And that's going to continue. You have a miniature version of what goes on in the Delta that goes on in some of the areas down the south end, because the same things happen. You're having a migration of shrimp up into the creeks and the bayous and the smaller versions of that Delta. And that happens on into, gosh, I've caught them, you know, down there into November. I typically like to be up in the Delta by then, but right now what I'm seeing is, at least down in the Sound, is an early part of this transition where you get tons of shrimp at the mouths of the rivers, on the flats at the mouth of the river. Real quick side story, my trip a couple days ago, we were down in the Sound and we left out of West Fowl River. And what I was going to do, there's a lot of fish at the mouth of West Fowl River, a lot of fish up into West Fowl River a little ways. But what you have to do is, when you launch, you got to go get out of the way to let all the boats get out of there before you can start fishing it. So I said, well, let's go run up here and get up on this bank and throw topwaters for a few minutes. I know there's a lot of mullet up here. And Sean and Mike, we threw topwaters for about a half an hour, probably had 5-6 blow-ups, caught maybe 3 fish. And I was going like, and I was hearing some fish blowing up. And so I picked up a popping cork, and guys, I'm not exaggerating. I threw that thing out there, and fish were hitting the cork. They were hitting the shrimp. You could not catch them any faster. And you would have sworn when we were throwing those topwater baits that there wasn't a fish anywhere around there. And you could throw that thing out there. I mean, I'm telling you, if you threw it out there and popped it one time, usually and you miss a fish and you took a couple cranks on it, if the fish weren't hitting the cork, they were hitting the shrimp underneath it. It was
man, that's awesome.
And it's just a product of all these shrimp being in there right now. So, you know, when there's shrimp in there like they are right now, you're hard-pressed to get them to hit. I am, anyway. Let me put it this way. I'm hard-pressed to catch them on anything other than some kind of shrimp imitation. I started throwing up just a grub, basically, with a real light jig head on. We're only in like 2.5-3 feet of water, but I started throwing that just because I didn't want to keep throwing a cork and just to do something different, and that worked almost as well, not nearly like the cork did. But the point I'm making is that where I was going with all of that is, when these shrimp are in here like this, you're going to have to be fishing shrimp. And I think what's happening this early part of this kind of pre-transition period is the fish are staging at the mouths of these rivers. And I know I haven't been up there yet, but I know that there's a lot of fish that are being caught just south of the interstate, say between Gilliard Island and the causeway, mm-hmm. and some of those areas there. Lots of bird schools up there. The downside to this time of year, Sean, and you know this too, you get up there this time of year until it's gotten really cool, and you'll get on bird schools, and there'll be a mixed bag of trout, white trout, and gaff tops.
And magnum gaff tops.
Magnum gaff tops. And so that'll clean up. That'll really clean up as it cools off right now. But that's probably the one that I'm catching a lot of fish down south still, and two that I'm, you know, this time of year you still have to deal with that somewhat. It's kind of kept me from going up there. But that's getting ready to change, particularly next week. I think I'm going to probably spend a little bit more time more in the northern end of the bay. So I would say, if you like to fish that northern end of the bay or the central to the northern part of the bay, I would definitely, you know, target places like, you know, all of those flats south of the interstate, you know, the Arlington Brookley area, mouths of Dog River and mouths of Fowl River. Oh, we had a really good trip. What was the day the other day when it rained so bad? Whatever day that was, last Thursday, we just to be safe, and we had a little bit of wind out of the southwest, we went out of Fowl River and barely made it out of the mouth of the river, and we were on fish. So there's just a lot of fish staging right now at the mouth of these rivers. And once they start to push up in the river, the trout will be behind them. And that they get up in the rivers, up in the rivers themselves, well up in them. And then when the shrimp move out, the trout stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they're on the fin fish. And so that'll be more of our late fall, wintertime pattern. And the same thing happens in the Delta. Is you'll have those shrimp push out of there when we really get our first good freeze or first good cold snap. And that's when they really get on those, something other than a shrimp imitation, you know. So
no, and that's something worth talking about, too. I would come back and talk about shrimp imitations versus using regular shrimp or live shrimp. But so the shrimp are, and a lot of us have fished for a long time, makes sense. But if somebody's new to it, shrimp will push it up. And then they're going to drop out. I mean, these.
Yep.
So, I mean, right now the shrimp are heading north, or they're heading up to the rivers and the bayous now. And the trout, like you said, are following them in there. When the shrimp get in there, the trout will get in there. And then at a certain point, water temp, the shrimp are going to drop out.
That's exactly right.
And you get some good fishing while the shrimp are dropping out, too. That's a.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You almost have kind of like the reverse of this thing as they start to fall out of there. You kind of have the reverse thing of what's going on right now. You'll have birds actually up in the river systems, feeding on the shrimp as they go out of there. So, yeah, you'll have the kind of the opposite thing happen. And that's kind of short-lived because once they get out of there, again, the bird schools don't happen because there's no shrimp in there. The birds are feeding on the shrimp too, you know. So they're you won't have the bird schools. Birds are still feeding on other stuff, but they won't be diving on the shrimp as it gets colder. You won't have the bird schools like that. But yeah, that's exactly what happens. And that's usually about Thanksgiving, give or take, is when we get our first sure enough close to or freeze, and that's when you'll see that phenomenon take place. And then you'll start heading more towards that wintertime pattern where you're fishing more of the river channels and the ledges. I know I'm getting ahead of us of where we want to be right now, but that's kind of the whole cycle. And it happens every year. The tricky part with the Delta is, and I don't have to tell you because this has been going on for years now, is the salinity's dropping out a lot sooner than it used to. I don't know if it's because they're running water north of us or what, but I think a lot of people will agree that, you know, that deal up there that used to last well into the holidays and sometimes later than that isn't lasting that long anymore.
Agreed.
And it happens overnight, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost like you'll go up there for a week straight and just have this beautiful green water and literally get up the next morning with no upstate rain, running up the river, running up the tensile, and I'm going, is that hyacinth right there? And I'm looking at my prop wash going like, wait a minute, that's mud. That's muddy water. And it's almost like overnight it goes away, you know. And
yeah, so, it's not like it trails off.
No, it doesn't. It's just gone. I mean, it's just overnight. And you know the fish are still there. They're probably in the deeper sections of the water. I just have never, when it gets, they start doing that kind of thing, I have trouble catching them. I know they're still there. I just have trouble catching them. I don't know if it's because I'm too impatient or what, but there's probably a way to drop down into those, you know, deep sides of the river channels and the tensile where you're getting into that 17 and 18 and 25 feet of water. And same way with the Spanish, some of those areas down there, you know, so you can figure out how to do it. There's people that know how to do it. I just don't. But that's what happens.
And those are the places in the wintertime we're going to be focused on them as well. Coming right back, more from Captain Bobby Abrascato, Fall Fishing Special with Bobby. Get your notepad out. We'll be back in just minutes. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Continue our conversation with our buddy, Captain Bobby Abrascato from 18 Fishing Adventures. Bobby, I do want to circle back for a second. You're talking about shrimp and getting bit on the cork. You know, y'all were throwing topwaters, and then you went to a cork with shrimp imitation. This, and now, Bobby's pure. I ride dirty sometimes. In other words, I will run some live bait. I am.
Well, sure.
Bobby is a... the rod's clean.
Well, the difference between me and you
is he's really good at it.
Well, no, that he goes every day. If you got to stop and find shrimp and the cost of shrimp and all that, that can get expensive. And the time and effort it takes to get that. For me and you, we go once every week or two or three. It's not a big deal.
But the difference
Mike, you hit the nail on the head. It's the chasing it down to me, which it's gotten a little bit better, I guess. But and it didn't do it on purpose. It just, going that way. But it just, when it got to the point where I was going like, man, I'm doing, the days I didn't get it or didn't feel like getting it or whatever and found out I was doing just as well, I just slowly migrated that way. But the cost of it's one thing, but the hassle of it to me is the, when I leave my house with my boat hooked up, my rods are rigged up, the next stop I got is the boat ramp, what I'm saying? So I don't have to deal with that. And that to me is what I enjoy. And then I enjoy being out there, and I've been fortunate being, and I'm not a snob. I mean, Lord knows, I still love putting a croaker on the hook. I love a croaker bite, and I'm certainly not above soaking a shrimp under a slip cork or something. But anyway, I've gotten a kind of a new, I don't know what you want to call it, a niche, but a group of people that go with me now just because of that. They'll go like, I can put a shrimp bite under a slip cork and drive out to a gas rig and catch fish. I don't need to hire a guide to do that. I want to learn how to do what you're doing, and I enjoy it so much more for that same reason, for the same reason we were just talking about it. So it's kind of been a good thing for my business, too, because as far as I know, I'm the only one that does artificial only guiding in our area.
Well, but here's what I was getting to. So, but this time of year, I'm like Bobby. I'm riding clean. And I will say this, that for efficiency, number one, you're going to catch them. Number two, you will catch, here's a shocking thing. And Bobby, you disagree. I don't know that you will. You put more fish in the boat using Voodoo or whatever shrimp imitation under a rattle cork than you do with a live shrimp. I'm just here to tell you.
Not even close. Yeah, it's not even close.
You miss a hit, you let the cork sit, you catch, the fish comes back and finds it, you get the fish off faster, get it thrown back in there, it's just faster.
Yep, absolutely, and you don't need it. When they're feeding like that, I mean, you can literally, you don't have to get fancy even with the lure. Just even a torn up lure, as you guys well know, you get on one of those hot schools like that, and man, you can catch fish on a lure that's shredded. I mean, just shredded. They'll still hit it. They just hitting anything. They're in such a blind feeding frenzy to where they're just going to hit anything that's in the water that even halfway resembles a shrimp. So, you could do that. And I can't even imagine in a boat school throwing live shrimp. It's not even necessary. It's almost dumb because, a lot of times too, you'll lose the shrimp on your cast.
Yes.
So you don't even get the opportunity to. You don't get the opportunity to fish the shrimp you just put on. You got to reel in and put
and,
on.
And you can't throw. Yeah, I mean, if we go down the list, you can't throw. You can't if you got live shrimp on there, you can't throw as hard.
Right.
So you don't throw as far. Don't cover as much as the school. You miss that. You miss that fish on the second the cork gets in there. Now you got to reel it back in, get another shrimp. And like I said, I'm a guy that summertime, you'll find me running live shrimp under slip corks and all that. But come this time of year, I don't buy shrimp.
Yeah. And Bob, another question. What type of imitation shrimp do you use, and what size do you use? Everybody will want to know that.
Well, I've gone to exclusively to a Voodoo, not exclusive because I still use a lot of Gulf shrimp too. If I'm trying to catch redfish too, but 90% of the time I'm using a Voodoo shrimp in the baby size. They call it the baby, but it's the little 2-inch size. Okay. And they make a multitude of colors, and just about all of them work. I use what they call the chartreuse, which is chartreuse when it starts. It fades pretty quickly, but it ends up being the color, to me, the color of a natural shrimp, even when it's been well used. But I'll give you a tip on that. If you use that lure, when you get them in the pack, they come two to a pack. The first thing you do, open up the pack, get some super glued gel, and between right where the eye of the hook is, where it comes through, it's a pre-rigged lure, you got to pull the plastic back and just put a drop of glue right there in the eye and pull the head back down so the head's glued to their little jig head rig. And the reason for that is that lure, you catch two fish on it, starts sliding down the hook.
Yeah.
And now if you're in an absolute frenzy, they'll keep hitting it. But if you'll super glue that up, give it about a minute or two to set. I'll glue like a dozen at a time and hang them on my pegboard in my garage where I rig everything up. And then I'll put them back in the boxes and put them in the boat. So I got them all glued up and I'm ready to go. But I also keep glue on the boat because you get on a real hot school and eventually the glue's going to break. just glue it up, give it a minute or so, and it'll be glued up and it'll be ready to go again. And that's a tip on using that lure. And I tell you, if you don't do it, it's not going to work. It's not going to work very long for you.
Yeah.
So just get you a little thing of cheap super glue. Don't get the liquid gel if you're going to use it in the boat anywhere because it gets all over the place. Use the gel, just a drop is all it takes. Squeeze it down, give it a minute to set, and you're good to go.
You know, and you talk about the size too. This is, I mean, we're going to get into some more of the fishing, but this is the fishing this time of year. Finding the fish is, you know, it's you got to be ready to make hay when the sun shines. And that 2 inch, you run the chartreuse. I've run, like, listen, I learned over the years. I get on Bobby's boat and I go, oh, he's running this size. That's what I did. I'll throw the white with the chartreuse tail or the chartreuse.
Which works great.
Yeah, those.
Works great. Yep.
You can throw the bigger voodoos, which I have some.
Yeah,
right next to it, and these spots, because I think that must be the size of the shrimp or whatever, they hit those more, not that they wouldn't hit the bigger ones, they hit these more often, and I think you get better hook sets because there's less lure around the hook to get in the mouth.
Without a doubt. You get, and you don't give up anything just because you're going down the next size shrimp, voodoo up is the 3 1/4. So you're talking about an inch bigger shrimp, and you would think it wouldn't make a whole lot of difference. But the hookup ratio, like you just said, goes way down when you go to the bigger shrimp. But you don't lose anything from a size standpoint. Just because you're throwing a smaller shrimp, I promise you, you're going to catch the same size fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there, you know, that old, you know, I love the idea of the big bait for big fish. It doesn't work like that with shrimp. I mean, a 8-inch white trout will eat a 4-inch shrimp. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, it's different with a croaker, but I'm telling you, with a shrimp, they don't care, dude. They'll eat a sea shrimp. They'll eat the little 2-inch shrimp. And I think your point about the size of the shrimp that are in the water, when you get on one of those bird schools, keep your eyes open for the shrimp that are skidding on the surface, and you'll see what Sean's talking about. That's almost exactly the size shrimp that those now there's a bigger shrimp in there too, but that's the majority of those shrimp are about the size of that one, and it fits so perfect with what they're looking, you know, what they're seeing in the water there, because it's that size. The bait shrimpers don't even keep that size shrimp,
right?
They can't keep them alive, and you can't get them on a hook. But that's the majority of what those fish are feeding on, and that's another reason I think that little shrimp works better.
100%.
Yeah, that's a great tip for everybody. The glue and the size of the bait.
And go ahead, Bobby.
No, I was going to say one last thing. You know, one thing too is, you know, the connection between the cork and the line is a big deal too. This time of year, I use 20-pound fluorocarbon for the leader. During the summer, I'll be going down to 10. During the summer, when we're fishing some of the real shallow, clear stuff. But this time of year, you know, 20 is fine with fluorocarbon. And the other thing, that fluorocarbon lets that lure sink better. And the other thing, it's so tough, and you start getting in these hot schools like that where you're catching 50 or 60 fish in a, you know, between on the boat I'm talking about, in a 45-minute period, there's a lot of wear and tear on that line, and that fluorocarbon holds up really well. You don't be break. Those lures aren't cheap either, by the way. They're real cheap when you compare them to live shrimp, but they're not cheap, so you don't want to be breaking them off, and those, that fluorocarbon really, really holds up well too. So I'd highly recommend getting some good fluorocarbon leader when you're using those type of lures.
Now this is getting way into the weeds, but
no, that's great, Tim.
No, I'm not saying he's getting into the weeds.
You're
I'm saying,
getting into weeds.
Yeah, because fluorocarbon is generally stiffer than regular mono.
Correct.
Okay.
Especially the leader. Yeah.
Yeah, the leader material stiffer. If you have problems when you're throwing, you got a rattle cork and you got a shrimp imitation on there, you throw it. And the leader line, so below the cork, gets laid back over the cork, you know, so your cork's like laying funny and you got to goof with it and all that. I just think that stiffness of the fluorocarbon, when you throw that baby out there, you're ripping it out there, that stiffness keeps that shrimp separated from the cork a little bit better than regular mono, and you don't have the problems with line laying over the cork.
That's a fantastic point, too. And you're exactly right about that, because you throw that thing out there and you make this monster cast, and you look over, and when you're popping your cork and it's going under and there's not a fish on it,
right.
You got a tangle. You got to reel in and start over. And sometimes those tangles can get nasty. You go to this hot school and your buddies are catching
fish. Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, and you're trying to get untangled. You don't want all that crap to happen. You want to be in that water when those bites are happening, because, like you said, it lasts for a while if you fish it right, but the action's incredible. And so you don't want little uh-ohs like that happening. And that's a great point about, you know, helping to eliminate those looks. things are still going to happen. You're going to cast and have a bird fly into your line. You know, stuff like that's going to happen. But if you can eliminate the majority of the problems, you're going to catch a lot more fish.
Got about a minute here for the break, but I want to start this conversation. So you talked about fish staging at the mouths of rivers, you know, out in the bay going towards the delta or at the mouths of our dead-end rivers. How long do you give it? Like, let's say somebody gets there at daylight. How long do you give it to go, well, there's not going to be a bird school here, you know, go check the next place, or do you just keep checking? Like, what's your hourglass on that?
You know, that's a feel thing. It's hard. It would be hard to tell you. You know, 5 minutes or 20 minutes, and I got to be careful because I tend to fish a little too fast. I don't like to sit around and wait for fish to start biting or fish to show up. I want to go find some fish that are willing to bite. So and that's just different people's style of fishing. Some people are perfectly content to wait on a bite. You know, if I've been fishing an area quite a bit regularly, like, you know, several days in a row or several days over a period of a couple weeks, and I feel pretty good about it, I'll give it a little bit more time than if it's, you know, if I haven't been around or hadn't been on fish real well. So it's kind of hard to say. It's a feel thing. I wish I could tell you something better than that.
But, well, we'll pick this up after the break. Go to the break. Coming back, more with Bobby right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Now, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our buddy Captain Bobby Averscato with A-Team Fishing Adventures here. We talked about during the break, and of course you hear the updates, the marine forecast that runs from staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams. East wind is part of the mix here, so
20-30 knot.
If I hadn't asked Bobby an unfair enough question earlier with how long he waited on bird school, you said, where do you go on the east wind? Bobby, where do you go?
Well, for me, east wind is, especially in the lower end of the bay, is one of the, if you're going to have wind, it's one of the best directions you can get because the water stays clear. So when it gets like that, places like Portersville, Grand Bay, those areas fish really well on an east wind. Now, when you start talking about 20 to 25, even that area gets tough. You know what I'm saying? You know, but I'm talking about stuff like in the 15 to 20 knot range. You can get by with that area, and that's where I go. As soon as I hear that kind of wind, I'm going like, well, that's where I'm heading, you know, because there's plenty of places to get out of it. And again, the main thing is that the water stays clear on an east wind. Now, if that thing was the other way around, blowing out of the west, that's like Mike and I were talking about off the air. That's the day you sit home and work on tackle and watch football. You know, I don't go fishing.
Glue your shrimp heads.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, you glue up your voodoos. That's what you do.
Yeah. Or go play music. That's what you like to do,
there
too.
There you go.
So,
that's right.
And you can be playing at Daugherty's.
Daugherty's.
At Dolphin Island this weekend?
Sunday.
Yep, okay, well, everybody go out and see Bobby play.
Yep. We'll keep our fingers crossed that the weather holds up for us. We've been needing rain like crazy. My wife, Kim's going like, I can't decide if I want y'all to get rained out or our yard that gets rained. I don't know which one I want.
Well said. Hey, Bobby, let's kind of walk it through in this last few minutes here. So fish are, you know, staged at the mouths of dead ends and the delta, dead end rivers and the delta, moving up the bay. You've always watched temperature as well as a gauge for these transitions. You know, we call it summer fishing, we call it fall fishing, winter and spring. But the fish aren't looking at the calendar. The shrimp aren't looking at the calendar. They're working off of temperature. So when do you generally think temperature-wise that transition to them being in the dead-end rivers or in the delta rivers, when do you think that happens?
75 degrees. That's the number. And when I say 75, like I've had a couple mornings where we've left and it's been 75. And when I get in, it's 81 or 82. Now, again, it's the surface water temperature, you know, but I'm talking about where it's got to get and stay in that 75 degree and falling range. Typically, you know, this is getting to the calendar thing, but typically that's mid-October. I think we're right about on a, you know, some years it's earlier, some years it's later. I think this year is going to be right on about mid-October. You're going to see that 75 degree range and lower stay in there. And that's when you'll start to see that true transition start taking place where you're starting to see the actual shrimp moving up into the rivers themselves. You know, they'll still be making that little, you know, they'll do it for a little while to where they're moving kind of in and out. And some are going to stay and some are, you're still going to have some on the outside. But
two things can be true, right, Bobby? So people understand, like, just because your buddy said, I'm still catching them outside the rivers, doesn't mean there's not some already inside the river.
That, Absolutely, absolutely. And on top of that, it may happen at the lower end of the bay sooner or later than the northern end of the bay. Typically, the lower end of the bay, to me, it seems like they make that transition earlier than it does on the upper end. And I think that's got more to do with salinity. And so we won't get into all of that too much right now. But they so it doesn't happen everywhere at the exact same time. You know, you'll have, I think the Delta is like the last place that it happens in our system, whereas like down at the lower end in the Sound area, it's going, it's, you know, it's about, it's really almost probably happening as we speak. You know, we're still in early October, so it just depends. But that's the number, though. Getting back, just, you know, getting back to your original question, about 75 degrees is where that starts to happen, and we're not far away from there right now.
What's the water temperature right now, Bobby?
Well, it depends. It's, you know, it's in the low 80s, depending on where you're at. It's, you know, right around 80 degrees right now, but again, it'll bump down, Mike. You know, you'll have these cool mornings.
Oh yeah.
Like, and now, if you get an event like we're going to have this weekend where it blows for 2 or 3 days, that oxygenation of the water helps bring that water temperature down too. We haven't had a lot of real windy days lately. But, you know, get things like that happening, it brings it on down. But right now, we're right around, depending on where you are, it's give or take around 80 degrees right now.
So we don't have to go far. It's not far from 75.
Nope.
So it's
nope. And some mornings, like I said, when I'm getting the water, the first thing I do when I'm turning everything on is I'll take a quick look at it. And I've seen, had some mornings where we're starting out. Again, this is surface water temperature because the air's cooled it off on the surface. But, it, you know, there's some water that's in that 75-degree range right now. Again, as the sun hits it, as the day goes on, it brings it up. But eventually that'll keep staying down as we get these cooler evenings and shorter days.
Yeah, Bobby, as well, a good point there that you can, it's kind of like you could follow the migration in a way. You say it starts a little bit earlier, south end of the county, south end of the bay, in Baldwin County as well. You know, if you're a diehard Delta fisherman like I am, still worth getting down and fishing stuff in the south end and then just kind of following it on up to the north.
Yep, and it's one of those kind of things. These are one of those kind of the time of the year where I'm going, I'm down there and I'm going like, I wonder what's going on up there. Well, I'm just kind of thinking, if this is happening here down at, you know, out in Portersville or down in Grand Bay, the South Grand Bay, I wonder if those fish are up on those flat South I-10. You know, it's like you can't be in two places at the same time, but I'm going like, this has got to be starting to happen up there. So, you know, when we first started talking a little while ago, that's the reason I was going like, man, I'm about ready to head up there and start looking around a little bit, because I know if we're at this point down in the south end, we're not far away up on the north end.
That's good news.
If yeah. not, it already happening. If it's not already happening.
I tell you what, let's, and one thing I've earlier too, and I just an aside, but as you get these, you get your terminal tackle set up for catching this time of year, not just fishing, catching. We talked about the voodoos. We talked about the rattle corks and the fluorocarbon leader. You also do a little extra thing here, and I know you share this with people, so, but you tie like a loop knot there on that voodoo, right? You get,
know,
a little extra movement.
Yep. And I tell you, it doesn't seem like much. And if you're on a feeding frenzy, it probably wouldn't make a bit of difference. But man, when you're in that looking stage, it does make a difference. So I recommend any lure I have that doesn't have a split ring on it, and I don't like the split rings. Actually, I even take them off on lures that I do have. But your top waters, your slick lures, your voodoos, your jigs, your grub heads, anything that doesn't have a split ring on it, I tie a loop knot. And what that does is that frees the lure up. It gives the lure a little bit more action. And sometimes, you know, when you get on those fish that are on the fence about biting, that may be just enough to kick them over the edge, you know.
Good
so
stuff.
I'd recommend learning how to tie some kind of loop knot.
Good advice. And tell folks before we wrap up, too, they want to get a trip booked with you this fall, go catching. How do they do it?
A-teamfishing.com is the best way to get us. It's got an emailable contact form and our phone number on there. You can get us either way.
Bobby, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, Bobby.
Hey, thank you all. I enjoyed it as always, man. I wish we could do it longer, man. I could just keep going on.
You have your best too, Bobby.
Yeah. Hey, when the band gets together, man, you know what? The jam goes on. So,
yeah,
you know?
There it is. Yeah. Quote of the weekend.
Go see Bobby Sunday afternoon.